Happy Choices Thursday! Thank you for making great choices and listening to Choices. I am your host, Christine Choi. You can find Choices on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and all the other podcast platforms. In today's episode, I talked to my friend Michael Lomas. We met about 7 years ago at the restaurant that I managed. This was such a treat for me because Michael and I haven't talked to each other in a few years. We stayed connected through social media and he found out that I had a podcast. He listened to an interview I did with a mutual friend of ours and reached out to me to let me know he enjoyed listening to the interview. We got to talking and here we are, talking about some of the struggles that he had gone through. We talked about his depression and the stigma around it and how it affected him. This is such a powerful message, and I am so grateful that Michael decided to talk to me about this. Going back to how we met, I actually have very hazy memories of those times, or really any time in my past. But lucky for us, Michael has what he calls a curse, where he remembers everything in vivid detail. Something I wish I had, because I'm pretty sure I have a curse where I can't remember anything. Of course, as Michael talks about how we met, I remember the moments and it was so much fun. So as he started telling me about how we met, he said the words, "I had my birthday at your restaurant." And a light bulb went off in my head and I just burst into laughter because, oh, I knew what was coming. So it was Michael's birthday and it was time for cake. Yes, the cake. Oh, what a special cake that was. This amazing cake, a chocolate cake, was baked in the shape of a large penis. Yes, it was a giant penis cake. So the server was having a great time with this party, obviously, and it was time for the cake to be cut and served to the party. So the server comes inside and calls over all of the restaurant staff so we can all see the cake. So we all died laughing, we all snapped some photos, and I definitely got a couple photos in my phone. And Michael's friend Joel came inside to thank us for cutting the cake and introduce himself. Honestly, as a manager of the restaurant, I think I thanked him for the great memory for all of us because it was hilarious. And mind you, this was a fine dining restaurant. I mean, I still will say that it's a casual fine dining, but nevertheless, it was a white tablecloth restaurant. So I get why Joel felt like he should probably come inside and say thanks. Anyway, that day passed by. It was a great time, so on and so forth. And fast forward to maybe a couple days later, and it must have been a weekend, and Michael and his friends were at the restaurant having a couple drinks. I, being a great manager of a restaurant, was making my rounds meeting guests and saying hello. I guess I had introduced myself to Michael, and he says to me, "Wait, are you the Bok of Choi?" Now, to justify that, we have a lot of mutual friends. We just didn't know each other until that moment. And I guess while we were talking, he talked about the birthday party he had at the restaurant. And at that moment, I excused myself because I was now on a mission. I had to go tell my boss, who was at the bar. So a couple minutes later, Michael saw this big white man cutting through a crowded bar to make his way over to him with this big handshake, and the boss man bought Michael a drink on the house for being penis cake, and that is how Michael got his nickname at the restaurant, and also how he rose to VIP status at the restaurant. That was definitely a great memory. Anyway, I really appreciated that I was reminded of this story because, man, it was such a funny story. Anyway, so from there, we saw each other a lot more often and we became friends. Then life happened and time happened and we kind of lost touch. But honestly, these are the times when I'm truly grateful for the time we live in, where we can just follow people's lives online, you know? I'm the type of person who feel connected to people deeply upon meeting them. So I don't necessarily require constant communication, but I really, really do love being able to celebrate people's lives as they go through big, exciting changes. For Michael, it is his upcoming wedding next month to his beautiful fiance, Alex. and you'll hear how big of a role she played in his life and how much she helped with his depression. Okay, so let's get onto the interview. Here's my talk with Michael Lomas. What's up, man? How have you been?
Busy, tired, all of the above.
Yeah.
What about you?
Busy, tired, and all of the above.
Yeah.
Congratulations again.
On being alive?
Engagement, but yeah. Did you guys set a date?
October 27th.
Is she going crazy planning?
She's a planner. She's an artist. She designed the invitation. She designed the programs, everything. And I'm just basically, I'm just sitting here and smiling and nodding.
Yeah. Awesome, man.
Yeah.
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 Cool.
Yeah. What about you? Married, two kids?
Married to myself. I have a child named Kobe. He's a cat.
Everybody wants to be a cat.
All right. We're just going to do an opening icebreaker game.
Fire away.
Okay. WWYD, what would you do? And in this one, you have to pretend that you're single. You're on a date with a girl, and she keeps checking her phone and seems obviously distracted each time she checks her phone. You ask her if she's okay. She says yes, but this continues to happen, but she won't share any of what's happening. What would you do?
Initially, it wouldn't be an issue, but it would kind of snowball into, okay, look, if there's something wrong, just tell me and it's fine. I'm not going to take it personal and we can pick this up later. Like, just act like a human. But if it's like genuine disinterest, I would honestly just be like, okay, that's just rude. Like, why?
Yeah.
I'm not single. So like, honestly, when the better half and I go out to dinner, we make a point to like, do not put your phone on the table.
Right.
Like, it's just, I honestly think that like having, in this day and age, having your phone on the table means that there's, I'm here, but there's potentially something that's more important that's going to happen, and I can check out at any minute.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in a nutshell, I think that would drive me absolutely freaking crazy.
Yeah, I agree. Plus, especially if they just keep doing it.
Well, yeah. I'd like to talk to this person, assuming, right? You're on a date. You like to get to know them, and it's like, oh, hold on, Angry Birds. Really? You know?
Can you imagine? They're just playing trivia every 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like, you could have sat at home and played HQ. Like, why are we here?
Oh, this is cool. Funny.
So, yeah.
All right, cool. Are you ready?
Oh my God, are you going to grill me?
I'm going to grill you. We're going to talk about you and your life.
Let's go.
Okay, well, we'll begin by going back into the past and talking about your childhood. Growing up, your family dynamics, going to school and friends and all that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's almost about as boring white-collar American as you can get, because I grew up in a house with two parents who were, you know, my mom was at home. Like, she was very involved in school and, like, you know, we had after school snacks and she made dinner every night. And like, my dad worked, but he worked early hours, so he was home early. So, I mean, we were, you know, as a kid, I just kind of felt like that's how everything was. And then come to find out, you know, people divorce and it's ugly or it's good. Or, I mean, as I got older, I was like jealous because I would have friends who would get home and be like, oh yeah, my parents are going to be home for like 3 hours. And I'm like, I can't walk in the house without my mom being like, hey, how was your day?
Right.
Of course, now, you know, I realize that that is a huge benefit, but grew up really, really, really lucky, you know.
Yeah.
Family was always around, super close.
Do you have siblings?
I have one younger sister who is, you know, at this point, my best friend. She just had her first baby.
Aww.
Yeah, it's cool, but it's like, it's also kind of creepy because it's like makes me realize that it's like, oh, hell, we're not kids anymore. We grew up in the same lifestyle and household. Like, she was there was the four of us and the family dog and, you know, everything other than a white picket fence, basically. It's like, it could not have been more cookie cutter, quote unquote, perfect, you know, like Pleasantville Americana, basically.
Yeah.
In the suburbs, nonetheless.
Yeah.
Right?
How about your school life with friends and growing up?
I mean, that was cool because, like, the neighborhood that we grew up in at the time, there were kids everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that us are the last generation that, like, grew up playing outside mm-hmm. in the street.
Right.
I can vividly remember, like, we would get on our bikes and go around two blocks and round up the neighborhood kids and be like, yo, we're going to play hockey at 12, you know, bring yeah. roller blades and your stick. And we would just set up two nets in the middle of the street and, you yeah. know, have a pickup game. Or, you know, somebody had a basketball hoop on a court and, you know, that's how we grew up. So, again, just like, it was Pleasantville. It was yeah. so... So just
like what you see in movies.
Yeah, like privileged. It didn't really hit me that it got difficult when my family moved when I was in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. I can remember, like, to this day, the worst day of my life was the first day of high school. Because I remember being dropped off. My dad dropped me off and I knew nobody.
Right.
Not a soul. And I'd never, again, growing up in this... You know, these kids are the kids that I'd played with since we were literally like four, like mm-hmm. old enough to talk, right? Now, all of a sudden, it's like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
And I can remember class was fine. And I hated school, by the way. So for me to say that class was fine is a big thing. But I'll never forget that first day, like lunch, mm-hmm. where, you know, you've got all these other kids who grew up together and they're now going into high school. And of course, as freshmen, you're like, I'm hot shit. And I can just remember, like, sitting in the quad, you know, eating my sandwich and just, like, looking around like, okay, yeah. Tuna fish. Awesome. It was like that for a little while. That was my first kind of, like, you know, reality check. Yeah, it's not all milk and cookies.
Yeah.
You know, because up until that point, that's really all that I'd known, which I totally understand now was just completely, completely rare.
Yeah.
But, I mean, other than that, obviously, I made friends and... Just, you know, some of my best friends, again, best man at my wedding, Joel, you know, that's from high school. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I'll actually tell you that story. I started palling around with like just the people who would just like talk to me at mm-hmm. first. And I'll talk to anybody, right? You know, in high school, you have your cliques and, you know, the jocks hang out with jocks and all this and that and the other. And I would just eat lunch with these dudes who were the first people that like would say hi.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because Joel and like his group of friends would sit in their own little circle, like 6 feet to the right of us. And it was so funny because I'd had a couple classes with him and whatnot and a couple classes with some of his friends. There was just one random day where like he walked up to me and I'm sitting there eating my lunch and he's just like, hey. And I'm, you know, I'm looking around. I'm like, he's like, yeah, you. He's like, we have so, you know, world geography or whatnot together. Right. And I'm like, yeah. And he looks at me and just goes, why do you hang out with these guys?
Aw.
I was like, I don't know. Like they were just kind of, I swear to God, looks me dead in the face with like a stone cold. He just goes, yeah, well, these guys suck. So you're going to hang out with us from now on. And I'm sitting there and I'm like literally like mid lunch. And he like just starts walking away and like stops and looks back and he's like, that means get your shit and come hang out with us. You're now part of our crew. And it's just been that way ever since.
Oh, how funny.
I don't know why. I don't know how, but it's just like, you know, that's just how it happens. So yeah, I mean, everything past that was fine, but it's like, it was super just interesting just to have like I said, you know, growing up with these people that you've known literally since you were just barely walking.
Yeah.
And then to go to like, I've never felt more alone in my entire life.
Yeah.
That was definitely a learning experience.
Yeah. Okay. So it seems like you got to high school and you had a moment of loneliness, but you know, you were, I guess, kind of saved by your friend. Obviously we know as we get older, we kind of face harder things in life. Did you go through something in high school?
This is so out of the ordinary for me just to even, you know, have conversations like this, but mm-hmm. for whatever reason you asked and I was like, yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. Going back to exactly how I grew up mm-hmm. in terms of the perfect family, you know, I don't know what it's like to go to bed hungry. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's like to, you know, not have a jacket in the winter or, you know, new shoes for school. Like as a kid, you just think that that's normal. And then as you get older and I've been fortunate enough to, you know, travel and whatnot and you meet people who just do not have these simple luxuries. Yeah. And it really kind of, you know, I'm glad that I was able to cognitize like, wow, you know, wow. But that plays such a key role in kind of what prompted this discussion, which is, you know, I'm 31 And for honestly over half of my life, I've just dealt with, at sometimes just crippling like depression and anxiety. And to hear the backstory of, dude, you grew up in a perfect world. Like, how in the world are you sad, quote unquote, right?
Yeah.
You know, was the issue. And I can remember, it was before high school. I actually remember it very vividly. It was sixth grade. So I was, I don't know, what are you in sixth grade? Like 11, 12?
Yeah.
I don't think there was any event or anything that, like, you know, sparked or, you know, flipped the switch.
Yeah.
But I just, for whatever reason, I was, you know, we were tasked with writing a paper. Like, you can write about whatever you want. I didn't know what to write about, didn't care, and I was just kind of having a bad day. And I chose the topic of just my life. And I kind of put out, you know, my day-to-day and just literally just, like, thought through the pen as I was writing it. And the teacher of that class, who is an amazing human being, who I'm actually very close with to this day and is coming to our wedding, was intelligent enough to kind of read through it.
Mm-hmm.
I got an A+, by the way, nice, on that paper. But she also was intelligent enough to pull me aside and just be like, you're too young to really understand what's going on, but some of the things you're saying in here, like, how do you feel?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was the first conversation, or that was the first thought process where I was kind of like, I have no reason to be upset about anything or whatnot, you know, or angry or that, of course, she does her job. She talks to my parents, and that parlays into my mom, of course, being just the overbearing, loving mother that she is, of course, you know, freaks out and goes from 0 to 100. So all of a sudden I'm like in therapy once a week and I'm talking to, you know, some guy. I don't really understand why I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I remember the initial conversations were like, okay, yeah, we should probably get this under control. And this is where, again, it all ties back into growing up. Like, you talk about the friends that you have, and these are people that you've known your entire life,
yeah,
and you've done everything with. And it circles into the stigma of mental health. Because I can remember, you know, being put on medication at like 12 years old just to quell the storm. And I can remember at that age, like, these are my friends, right? I can tell them anything. And I can remember telling my closest friends this and them looking at me like, and like backing up. Mm. So are you crazy? Was the thought process. Like, so, and I mean, this is like right after Columbine too, right? Like, this is like 2000, like, right?
Yeah.
So that was just clouding everything. And now it's like, you know, the kids that I've grown up with are looking at me like, so, wait, do you like want to die? Like, are you gonna shoot up the school? And I'm like, no, I'm just kind of telling you like what's going on, right, basically. And the hardest thing was like, these are, you know, the people that I've known my entire life, and now they're all of a sudden like putting an arm's length between me because of something that I don't even understand at that point, and that they certainly don't. And I can remember that. At that young age of 12, going home and just being like, I'm not taking this stuff. There's nothing wrong with me, you know.
Yeah.
And then just trying to talk myself into, I'm fine. Like, no, I'm not, you know, blah, blah, blah. I just want to be normal. I want to fit in. I want to have friends. And, you know, after that, it was, I'm still going and I'm talking to, you know, therapists at 13, 14, 15.
Yeah.
But these conversations are literally just me sitting in a room talking about baseball.
Yeah.
It got to a point to where they were like, look, I'd love to take your, you know, hundreds of dollars every week, but he's just not at a point to where, you know, like, this isn't helping, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, then, of course, my mom, you know, just being my mom, is like, oh, my God, my baby. And she's just, like, flying off the handle. And, you know, I was like that for, I mean, all through high school, definitely.
But how do you think you were actually feeling when you were kind of sitting in your own thoughts?
You know, from even that age, and as I said, like all through high school, it was trying to stay out of my own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I can also remember people being like, you'd meet new people and just be like, you know, I just feel off today, you know? And they're like, what, like depressed? And I'm like, yeah, kind of. And they're like, dude, why are you sad? And I'm like, I'm not sad.
Yeah.
I'm just like, and again, I will continue to drill home the point. You look at how I grew up and what I was fortunate to live through. And that's what people thought is like, dude, you have the world. Why are you sad? Mm. Like, screw you. Like, I don't even want to, like, just, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You have good days, you have bad days, but there was a long, oh God, probably a 10-year period of just like, I don't want to say denial, mm-hmm. but just, you know, like, no, I can overcome this. Right. And, you know, I don't need help. And almost akin to, you know, a drug addiction, basically, like, I'm fine. I don't have a problem. I'm fine.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, I guess that gets me up until, that'll get me up until the end of high school.
So you said that went on for like 10 years. So when did you actually kind of realize that you are struggling with something and that you needed to seek out some kind of solution or help?
It's, I want to say maybe, you know, I've been with Alex for 12, and she has, you know, just God bless that human being. She has seen the absolute best, and I swear to God, the absolute worst, like, mm-hmm. things that I am just like, I'm not talking about like being violent or anything. Right. Like, I've never been that way, but just like, you know, she's seen me like pacing a rut in our kitchen at 1 a.m. because mm-hmm. I'm freaking out about something, and she'll be the one to sit there and just be like, why don't we just sit down, you know? And I mean, that's just going from what I thought my life was going to be like with my closest friends ostracizing me to having someone who's like, whoa, right. chill out. It was honestly a combination of her and I want to say my sister, Nicole, my younger sister. You know, it's so funny because like she's my hero and I'm her hero. Aww. And it's like, I don't understand how that works because I look at myself and I'm like, I'm an idiot. How can I be anyone's hero? But like, I was the black sheep. I pushed all the buttons. I put all the gray hair on my parents' heads. She was like the 4.0 student that just went with the flow and did what she was told. But when she got into college, she was kind of having a hard time with I don't know for sure. I'm kind of reading, you know, what I saw. Mm-hmm. But I remember my mom freaking out like she freaked out about me when I was a kid because, you know, my sister was kind of just not sleeping and just mm-hmm. kind of all this. It was my sister, Nicole, who reached out to me and was like, yo, do you take meds for any of this? I feel like I might, you know, again, I just feel like she's a stronger person than I am. And I'm sure she would say the same thing about me. But it's like, and I was like, well, no, but this is how I feel. And she's like, yeah. Like, I think we're, sorry for the lack of a better term. It's like, I think we're fucked up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah. So it was a combination of that yeah. kind of took me back full circle to, okay, here's someone who is obviously important in flesh and blood, mm-hmm. who is okay with it, or at least understands.
Right.
And the final nail in the coffin was Alex being like, and this is probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
She told me numerous times, she's like, you should go see a doctor.
Yeah.
Go see a doctor. And I still had this, my own stigma yeah. of, no, you know, I don't want people to think less of me or think that mm-hmm. I'm incapable of things. And, you know, she's like, Michael, you're up till 5 a.m. doing nothing. This is not healthy.
Yeah.
And so I finally did. So for the last, I want to say 3-4 years, take a daily regimen of just, you know, and it was a trial and error.
Yeah.
But the best way I can describe it is it's like, it's so weird because like, and you know, I know that one of your things on this is like, where are you at now? And it's like, it took so much to get here, but I am totally fine with, I'm not totally fine. I'm far from totally fine. But it's like, you know, I understand now that it's like, look, you are taking a medication for an illness, mm-hmm. essentially, or, you know, a chemical imbalance, whatever you want to call right. it. That is no fault of your own. It's no different than, you know, my sister's diabetic. Mm-hmm. She takes insulin because her freaking pancreas doesn't work. Otherwise, she's going to die.
Right.
Like, it's honestly the same thing. I know now that it's not what you see on, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where it's like you're just dumbing down all this psychosis. It's,
yeah.
All this does for me is on those days where I quite literally open my eyes and it takes all the strength in the world just to get out of bed. Mm-hmm. That's what it helps me do.
Yeah.
And I realize that if I can do that, everything else is downhill from there. Mm-hmm. But it took a very, very long time to get comfortable with that. And it also took a lot of coercing to get to that point too from important people.
Yeah. You talked about having depression and anxiety. What are the couple times that it affected your life negatively?
In all honesty, I know there are times. This is where it kind of comes back to Alex and what she's been able to deal with is I guarantee you that she would be able to pinpoint like, oh yeah, there was that day where, you know, or that night where you were not you, like you were gone. You know, I think if you have, you know, your manias or your panic attacks or whatnot, you kind of check out physically. Like, I know they happen, but like I said, I know there have been some, but I can't really pinpoint anything other than just being like, and I think one of the bigger things that she still has a hard time dealing with because, you know, one, she cares, but, you know, if you don't deal with this, you don't understand, right? So, I mean, one of the hardest things is just like there will just be days where it's just a normal day and I will come home and quite honestly, it's like I just have to go. Like I can't be here right now. And for her, you know, for a long time that was like, what do you mean? You don't want to hang out with me? Like you don't want to like you? And I'm like, no, I just like I don't want to hang out with anybody. Like I just need to go. Like just do – what are you going to do? Nothing. I just need to go, you know, and there is no explanation for it. You know, those are the only things that I think I can think of where she now is just like, okay, well, if you need anything, call me and just check in. But that was definitely a hurdle for a while because as I'm sure, you know, if you have someone you care about that much, you're going to be like, is it me?
Right.
And it's like, no, you did nothing. I'm not mad. It's just, I just, for whatever reason that I can't explain, I didn't have a bad day at work. I just need to go.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's the only thing that I can really think of.
Yeah. Yeah. And through taking your medication, aside from just like being able to get up in the morning, how have things changed for you in your relationship, your work, just life in general?
That's also kind of, unfortunately, I don't mean to like deflect on all of this, but I think the crappiest thing about, you know, depression / anxiety is honestly, if you're living with it, I think it's harder to cognize, you know, exactly how it affects everything outside because you're too focused on what's going on inside. There have been times where I like will forget to fill a prescription or whatnot. And it used to be like an offensive question, like, are you on your meds? I'd be like, you know, I would just go into this mode of like, what do you mean? Now it's like one of those things where she's just like, look, I can tell that you are struggling. So if you're being an idiot and you haven't done this, go do it.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a phone call. And it's gotten to a point now to where, I mean, I've told her flat out, I'm like, do not ever be afraid to ask me that question.
Yeah.
I used to, you know, your initial reaction is a knee jerk, like jump down your throat. Now I'm able to step back and be like, okay, well, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that you've kind of explained that, you know, your sister and Alex were a huge help in that, but how have other people around you been dealing with this with you? Are you open with them about it?
That again is kind of the premise of why I guess I'm even having this conversation right now. I am comfortable explaining this now versus before I thought it meant that I was broken and I didn't want to tell anybody about it versus now it's like, you know, what do you mean you don't want to come out for drinks? And I'm like, dude, I just don't. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay. You know, there are still people that are very close to me that don't understand that. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with that because honestly, unless you deal with it, you don't understand it.
Yeah.
I think the only other thing is what's been really interesting and almost therapeutic, but also led me to kind of wanting or being willing to talk to you in public is that just kind of throughout life, I have had certain, you know, if you deal with it, you can see, you know, certain signs and you can kind of read people and you know how to ask what would be considered tough questions, but are the right questions. And it's been awesome to, you know, I've met numerous people now, whether they be coworkers, friends, family, that you kind of gauge and you're like, so how about this? And they're like, yeah, you know, and again, the reason I wanted to talk to you is just because it's like, it's such a great feeling to 98% of these people are going through what I feel like I'm so lucky to have gotten over, in the sense of they're still living in this, there's nothing wrong, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But then as soon as they hear someone else being like, yeah, dude, I've been there. You know, sometimes you just, you know, you don't want to go to work. And it's not that you hate your job, or it's not that you're a bad employee. It's just that you don't want to go to work. You don't want to turn the lights on in your house. And anytime I've had those conversations, you know, with these certain people, they've, you know, their eyes kind of get wide and they go, oh my God, dude, I don't talk to anybody about this, because they fear, you know, the ridicule that I dealt with, that everyone, you know, at a very young age and still somewhat to this day. And it's like so fulfilling to see, like, look, dude, you're not alone. Like, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
I know that. And it's like, you know, I think that one of the biggest things is it's just like, you know, yeah, there is a stigma, there is this, but you also have numerous people, as we talked about earlier, like, you just have to pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm having a bad day. All right. Well, what kind of a bad day?
Yeah.
You know, and that's just been really cool to kind of tap into people that I care about and be like, I'm here. I'm happy to help and I'm happy to share. And I'm sure it's been worse at some point. You know, it's not the end of the world. Don't jump off a bridge, basically.
Yeah. My podcast has been leaning a lot towards the mental health and substance abuse. And of course, reading up on a lot of the mental health stuff, the hashtag and the stigma, I mean, that's one of the things that I'm like super passionate about, because I feel like exactly what you're talking about, where people just don't know about these things and they just assume that it means you're crazy. And so what do you think are the ways that people can get better at to end the stigma? Like the people that are listening to this that don't deal with these struggles, but are, you know, may see some signs from people around them.
I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, I still truly believe that unless you're actually physically dealing with this, you know, I listened to your Anthony Bourdain, you know, solo episode, and you mentioned, you know, like it's the invisible illness. It's like, you know, it is an illness. It is medically diagnosed. It's an illness. B, I think that strictly because, you know, a lot of times it's like, you know, what did you do this weekend? I just slept. Why? Well, because I'm exhausted from my Monday to Friday of putting on a happy face or a mask to pretend that I'm a normal member of society, because that's just what people expect of me, you know? And I think that if you don't fall into that category that, you know, unfortunately, and even Alex, to an extent, as she has flat out said, she's like, you know, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And that's I think the biggest thing is it's like, I don't understand. All I can do is try and be supportive, but you're not going to understand. And I think that's the, you know, it's not necessarily a problem, as long as you've got somebody who's willing to accept that it's like, you know, I don't need to put on a cape and save the world or you, but admit that, like, I have no idea what you're going through. I have no idea what that's like, but just know that, you know, trust me, if there was a magic pill that I could give you, I'd give it to you, you know, right? On the flip side of that is, yeah, in terms of the stigma, it's what really kind of, I guess, bothers me about it is you get, you know, you have your Michael Jacksons, your Whitney Houstons, your Prince, you know, these prominent people that, you know, overdose and die. And obviously that is a problem as well, because that's addiction. And they're obviously dealing with issues as well in whatever way that they can. But looking at the difference of how that is A, portrayed and B, accepted in daily life is kind of where I think we're missing the boat, because it's like all you hear is, you know, oh my God, Michael Jackson died and he broke Google because he was addicted to, I mean, freaking anesthesia. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, that's a little severe. Okay. Prince dies from fentanyl, which is a huge, you hear about this, you know, the opioid epidemic and, you know, I don't have a problem with that at all. You know, obviously there's an issue, but where I kind of think that the same conversation should be happening is, I mean, just look at recent, we had Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
Kate Spade.
Yeah.
Chris Cornell. Avicii.
Yeah.
Chester Bennington. The one that honestly hit me the absolute hardest was Robin Williams.
Yeah.
This was the first like celebrity that died that was just such a huge part of my childhood and gave me so much joy that it hit me so hard that, you know, this person was struggling that much.
Yeah.
But anyways, going back to the original point is it's like, okay, so you have, that's fine. These are prominent figures, but what about the thousands of other just regular people that die? What is it? 3,000 a day that die by suicide?
Yeah.
Why don't we put more focus on a mental health initiative?
Yes.
We're losing some of the brightest minds that we've ever seen, but we're also losing brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and parents, you know.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it really just kind of needs to get to a point, and I think it's starting slowly. I just don't think that really there's the right movement, or either people are just kind of scared to agree with it. But it's like, you know, if it's okay to call into work and say that, oh my God, I got the stomach flu and I was up throwing up all night, I think it also needs to be completely understood that sometimes it's healthy just to be like, I'm sorry, I just can't today.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're a bad person or a bad employee or weak.
Yeah.
For people that deal with this, those days happen all the time, you know, and obviously there's a limit. Like, you know, if it's 3 times a week, you know, then problems. But I mean, once every couple months, you know, I guarantee you I'll have a day where I don't have any reason for it, but it's just, you know, I open my eyes in the morning and I'm just like, I just want to pull the covers over my head. And I'm just like, no. I don't want to – it can be a Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what day of the week it is. It's like I just don't want to do anything.
Well, it's funny that you say that because it's really awesome to see that a lot of companies nowadays are doing the mental health days, right? But then on the flip side, there's still so many people that are in fear of using it because of how they're going to appear to their employers.
Right.
And that's the thing. How they're viewed has to change because we can keep doing these different initiatives – but if the society doesn't accept it, what's the point?
I mean, that's a really good point that honestly I hadn't even thought about is it's like, yeah, you know, say your company accepts it and your boss is mandated to, but if it means calling in to do that brands you with this scarlet letter, you're not going to do it.
Right.
Because chances are you've already been through years and years and years of ridicule and misunderstanding and you're trying to just do your best every day just as a person. And you know that just making that phone call is going to make it more difficult for you.
Yeah.
Or it's going to make, you know, just how you're viewed skewed,
yeah.
You know. And that's, I don't know how to fix that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I think that is definitely the problem.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That was a really good insight. Where do you think you are in your journey?
I will consciously say the best place I've ever been in terms of my journey. Step one is just realizing that this is who I am. It honestly did take me a long time. I've never been more comfortable in my own skin than right now, just with the help of, you know, other people, just taking a step back and saying, you know, let's just try and be the best you that you can be, basically. You know, everyone's got flaws. It just depends on how you accept them. Nothing's perfect. You know, it just isn't.
Yeah.
So I'm in a good spot. The only exception to that, I would say, is, you know, we talked about the notable people that we've lost, right?
Mm.
You know, your Anthony Bourdain. The ones that kind of hit me, honestly, were Chester Bennington, because I was, you know, I'm a big music guy.
Right.
And you said in the Bourdain podcast, too, like his wife, you know, posted a video of him 3 hours before he took his own life. And he's like laughing and he's fine. And you know, you've got Robin Williams, who says goodnight to his wife, who he loves dearly, goes into his bedroom and is found the way he's found. That's where this gets kind of even more confusing for me. And I think it really convolutes the issue of having people understand. I'm not sitting here looking for a pity party or, you know, this, that, and the other. I am thankful that I can honestly say that I have never been there. I've never been suicidal. I've never had I've never been violent towards other people. It's just always kind of been like, I kind of feel like poo.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But what terrifies me and what constantly lives in the back of my head anytime this stuff happens, and I think that the biggest thing that people who don't deal with this don't understand is that what I am afraid of is that I am potentially my own worst enemy. And what keeps me up at night is that how does someone like a Chester Bennington go from laughing and, you know, playing with his kids to, you know, what changed in a 90-minute span to where he said, this is no longer worth it, and I'm done. That is my biggest fear. You know, I don't understand that. That's what makes it more difficult for me, because it's like, look, these are things that I deal with daily, and I get what you're going through. But to that extreme, I mean, on a personal level too, I've had three close friends take their own lives. And the absolute worst thought is not for me, what could I do for these people? But I, you know, I'll sit here late at night and just go, what happened? You know, like I hurt for how much pain was this person in to where they felt like this was the only option? You know, it's weird and kind of morbid to say, but that is what's terrifying to me. And that's what keeps me up at night, is it's like, I've never been there. I certainly hope I never get there. But unfortunately, I can't guarantee that. Because I know that I deal with this.
It is really scary to think about that.
It just kind of goes back to what I said earlier about, you know, you do your best. In terms of, you know, the main question, where am I? How am I? I'm honestly probably the best I've ever been. I'm so lucky, just like growing up, to have a phenomenal support system that keeps growing, because I keep finding people that deal with this.
How do you feel today, physically, mentally, and spiritually?
I mean, physically, I feel terrible because I'm the fattest I've ever been in my entire life. That's the best I can give you. I think I'm 30 pounds heavier than when I first met you, and that sucks. And I'm getting married, and I'm just going to be fat. Maybe I'll just be... Maybe I'll just be able to tell our kids, like, your mother loved me when I was a fat tub of lard. So, you know, it knows no bounds. Mentally, I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm good, but with the asterisk of knowing that it's never good. But I think that if you understand that it's never good, you can kind of figure out how to make it good, if that makes a really roundabout way of sense. I'm doing okay. Spiritually, I mean, I've never been a religious person.
But I mean, like, just, you know, in your inner peace, I guess.
I'm okay. I mean, you know, it's going back to what we just talked about. It's like, I unfortunately just as a realist, and I think you have to be a realist, I will never, I am totally okay with the fact that I will never be able to answer that question with, I am great. It's just, it's not something that's going to be part of my life. But in terms of if I can answer it in what I just said is, I'm good. And feel confident and in that tone of, I'm good. That's good. I'm just chilling. You know, that's the best that I can hope for. And that's just kind of where I'm really trying to live right now.
Great. What do you think has been the biggest growth within yourself since your early 20s to now?
Other than my waistline? Honestly, just acceptance. And that obviously came with some help. I mean, just kind of that inner peace, as much as you can get of, okay, this is me. And you're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. There's going to be ups, downs, but not fighting it. Basically. Just, just being you. So that's been huge, actually.
That's awesome. Okay, so we're going to jump into Ask Choi right quick. And then we'll do a couple closing questions, and then we'll end the podcast. Okay, so I have a letter here. Dear Christine, okay, this might come off as kind of a childish email, but it's just something that's been bothering me a lot lately. I moved away for a job about a year ago and was visiting home last week. I was so happy to be hanging out with my closest friends, but I've noticed that the dynamic has shifted. I have always loved bringing my friends together and making my friend circles come together into bigger and bigger circles, which has been amazing for me. However, on this last trip, I was hanging out with a couple of my best friends from different original circles and noticed that they've become so much closer, and at times I felt like I was an outsider looking in. I know that it's only natural for one that leaves to not have as many inside jokes with the group or anything like that, but I am feeling really pushed out of both of those friendships. I feel like I try my hardest to keep the friendships going, but perhaps it's not enough. I got back home and been feeling uneasy about the time I spent with them when it was just us three. I feel petty for feeling this way, but am also kind of hurt by how I felt. Should I talk to them about it? If so, what do I say?
It's a pretty heavy letter.
I know. It's not really that childish.
No, not at all. I mean, you saved the hard one for me. Jeez. Honestly, as someone who's gone through that, you know, moving away, you can relate, you know, and kind of how we started just the casual banter of, you know, it's easier with social media and all that. I think that unfortunately with that, there's two ways to look at it. People move on. Life happens, you know, especially if you're young, like if whoever sent that in is, you know, if you're like fresh out of college or high school, you know, where everything is just this tight knit, you know, it's like, that's not life. You know, you just get further and further away and more stuff and more paperwork comes into your existence. And I wish I could go back to high school where the biggest issue I had was whether or not so-and-so was mad at me. Right? Right. But you get to, oh my God, I have a job. And now it's like, I could give two shits. My biggest issue is just my mortgage paid.
Right.
You know? So you push back these other things that you obviously care about, but they fall down the priority line.
Yeah.
I think some of that is natural. You know, yeah, if you move away, it's fine, but you're growing.
Yeah.
You're going to build new friendships. You're going to build new relationships. I would never say lose touch of those old ones and what made you who you are. Try and stay in touch. But I mean, I told you earlier, like my best friend lives 5 minutes away and I've been trying to get together with him all week.
Right.
And I can't.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how far away they are, but it's like, don't beat yourself up over it.
Yeah.
It's definitely talk to them. I think the biggest things and the most meaningful things in those older relationships that I've had are, you know, they're typically like, you know, drunken 2 a.m. conversations, but those are the real ones, right?
Where yeah. It's
like, I'm telling you, man, love you.
Love you, man.
And I'm always there. It's like, you just need to say that. Like, you know, hey, there's nothing wrong with saying, look, I value you as a person and I value this friendship. And I don't want to lose that. And I'm worried that I am far away and therefore I'm missing out.
Yeah.
You know, I love you, essentially, is the term that I think is just so, it's just not used correctly at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yes, talk to them, tell them that. But then also understand that that's normal and it's okay. And you're going to make new friends. And honestly, all that stuff that happens is going to make next time you go home that much more entertaining. Because you're going to be more appreciative to see these people and you're going to have more conversations and it's going to strengthen the relationship is kind of my experience has been.
Yeah, I kind of thought I would. So I might talk to the girls or guys. They don't specify if they're a girl or guy. I would talk to the friends about it kind of like, but in a joking manner, like almost kind of like, dude, you guys are like fucking best friends. And I'm like out here, whatever, like in passing, maybe not just like, hey, I want to talk to you about something. But something that I've noticed personally from moving away is that, like you said, some of your closest friends that you're close to, you don't even see or talk to as much as you would think you would. And there are friends who when I was living in San Jose or Redwood City, and they live in San Francisco or something, we were living 30 to 50 miles away from each other. And we were never talking, never hanging out. And fast forward to now, when I live 3,000 miles away, we actually talk so much more often. And, you know, like, you don't know at what time you guys are going to reconnect, but it's always going to remain the same, you know? So if you have that love for each other, if it's the right friendship for you and them, it's gonna come back around and you're gonna be fine.
It absolutely is. And I think that, you know, the flip side of that is just part of growing is you are unfortunately gonna grow apart from some people.
For sure.
You know, it's just don't burn yourself out on trying to maintain a relationship that is just not conducive to either health or life. It's like, look, I have numerous people that I love to death that I don't talk to and I don't invite to dinner. But if I see them out at a bar, I'll be like, dude, you know, holy hell, how you been?
Ugh, yeah.
That just happens.
I have such a hard time letting go. I told you earlier, I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. We're best friends forever.
I mean, I used to, especially with what we started with of like just how I remember everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe just part of getting older, I think now, and you know, it's like, you leave jobs and people are like, oh my God, we should hang out. And I have no problem. I mean, honestly, call it a dick move now, just being like, we're not going to hang out.
Yeah.
Like, dude, it was fun. I liked it, but.
See, I guess it's hard when it's like, because I relate to this a lot just because, you know, I've moved away from my friends of over 10 years. And some of, like I said, a few of them I talk to a lot more, but a few of them we really, really don't talk. And I feel like I make the effort to do so, but, you know, don't get it back. But when I go and see them, it's like nothing has ever changed. So it's a very confusing time being away from what you're used to, but it'll all work out. Just keep loving them. It's fine.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. It's just, again, depending on where that listener is in their life, life is just going to keep throwing stuff in between you and everything else, you know? And it's like, it's not your fault. It doesn't mean that you don't care. It doesn't mean you're a bad person, you know? Don't dwell on it.
Yeah.
Make the point that, like, look, this is what's happening. Acknowledge, truth be told, I actually, sorry to get long-winded, but it's like I had that conversation with Joel. We've had that conversation numerous times. I can remember when I was running my business, which is when I first met you, and I had zero free time. Mm-hmm. And he had just started working, and we went out just to, like, grab beers. And we used to go do everything. Like, we would go to Sharks games and Raider games and Warrior games. And it just got to a point to where I just had to keep saying no, 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 because I didn't have time.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make it clear. I was like, look, dude, you look this person in the eye and say, do not stop inviting me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying no because, you know, I don't value you or I don't value this friendship. It's just that I can't do this right now.
Yeah.
You have to put that on the table. Otherwise, people make assumptions and it all just goes downhill from there. And, you know, he was just like, all right, well, you know, I respect that, man. I just want to make sure that, you know, we don't lose touch.
Yeah.
Same thing right now, like just getting married. I've just been like, dude, I have no time for anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't mean I don't like you. Just call me in 2 months.
Yep.
You know, so.
Yep. Okay, great. Great answer. Great answer. Okay, so we're just going to do a couple closing questions. What brings you the most joy right now?
Why is that such a hard question to answer?
No.
It sounds cliche. But honestly, like, I feel like I just spent so much time trying so hard just to be Superman and just, like, conquer everything that honestly what just gives me the most joy right now is just simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a round of golf with friends, sitting on a couch on Sunday and watching football with, you know, my fiance and our friends. You know, we do a Home Alone party every year at Christmas. It's an ugly sweater party. It's a potluck. We all get together and we watch all the Home Alone movies. And it's the dumbest shit ever. And nobody watches the movies because you've seen them 1,000 times.
Yeah.
But
oh, I love that.
That's the stuff that I look forward to.
Yeah.
You know, I have no desire to go climb Kilimanjaro.
That sounds fun too.
No, it doesn't. It sounds absolutely horrible. Unless there's, like, you know, big bag of Doritos up there. I really think that I've been able to appreciate the simple stuff. And that's really all that I look forward to right now.
Cool. To someone out there that might be going through similar hardships as you did in your past, what would you say to them and where would you recommend they start the healing process?
Kind of a two-way street. I think that it really just depends on their situation. You know, I have a great support system now. I did not for the majority of, you know, the time what I'm dealing with. That's why we have hotlines and whatnot. And it's like, look, if I think that is just an underutilized resource too. Mm-hmm. It's like, look, if you really have no one to talk to, you're talking to someone who's not going to judge. And it's amazing how much of just, look, this is what's happening, will fix or at least put you back on even keel with, okay, I can deal.
Yeah.
But also, if you are one of those people that is doing the, like I said, the Monday to Friday, wearing a mask, so to speak, and then coming home and just living under a blanket and eating popcorn on weekends, which is exactly what I'm going to do today. So there's nothing wrong with that. I think what people don't realize is there is someone in your immediately touchable reach that is either going to completely understand because this is such a prevalent issue, or is at least going to be big enough to say, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm happy to help.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a big step to take that I would recommend that to anybody. And it's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's absolutely terrifying to make that first call or to bring that up, you know, over a dinner conversation. But at least in my experience, I've been pleasantly surprised with how well that's been received.
Yeah.
I always recommend that.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. And Hey, Michael Lomas. It's kind of funny that I can't ever say your name without saying your full name.
No one can.
Thank you again for coming on the show. And I'll probably talk about this more in my intro or outro later, but this like means a lot to me because kind of some of the things that I've personally been going through as well. And I know it's not always easy to talk about this, not knowing who's going to hear or like kind of, like you said, like publicly speaking about things you've struggled with is never easy. So I really appreciate you talking to me today. And yeah, I hope you have a great day just chilling.
Yeah, it's equally as surprising to me to dive into it, but I appreciate the forum. I think it's super cool that you have a forum for this. And again, I know that direct conversations have helped certain people. If it helps a stranger, it's worth it all in the end. So
yeah,
I enjoyed it.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, man.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, Felicia.
Bye.
Man, this interview really got to me. It really got me to think about my own journey in mental health. This talk with Michael definitely made me less afraid to talk about it. So for the next solo episode, I'm going to talk about my own mental health journey. I think I'm still afraid to talk about it completely openly to the people in my life, but I'm so grateful to all of you because I know you'll listen to my story without judgment. So thank you for that. And as I related strongly to this episode, I'm sure many of you felt very connected to Michael through the interview. And I think this is the story of a lot of people with depression. And I think it's definitely worth exploring and talking about. And if you do not suffer from depression, first of all, I'm very happy for you and happy to know that you don't suffer from it. And second of all, I hope this episode made you a bit more aware of how to respond to someone who may be struggling with it. And I also wanted to briefly explain the chemical aspect of depression, but it's pretty complicated and probably quite long-winded, so I just posted a couple links in the episode description so you can click on those and check them out if you want to. One of them's an article from the Harvard Medical School, and the other one's just a short 3-minute video that's got a nice, easy visual to it. So just check those out. If you feel depressed and don't feel that you have someone you can talk to, there are people who want to help you and want to talk you through it. I will post the hotline numbers in the description as well. The numbers provided are for the US, but please remember that any of these numbers you can find on Google quite easily. So definitely make sure you talk to somebody. And I do want to add that you might really be surprised who's willing to listen and will try to understand. So maybe try reaching out to the people around you. They might be waiting for you to open up to them. So that is all for today. Please let me know what you thought of this interview, what you think of the podcast so far, and any nominations for people I should interview in the future. There's no range of people. If you think I should reach out to President Obama, I will. Will I get the interview? We won't know until we try it, you know? So make sure you email all those to choicesaspodcast@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to follow me on social media, Choice Says Podcast, all one word, on Insta, Twitter, and FB. And that is all. Okay, thanks. Bye.